With regard to our interpersonal relationships, peace is so very important. It's important that we have peace on the job. It's important that we have peace in the home. And it's especially important that we have peace in the church. There are some areas of life where we can't have very much influence on whether or not there is a peaceful relationship. Although we can control what we ourselves do. But the church is an environment that the Lord set up, and it's to be managed in such a way that peace ought to rule at all times. And I want to look with you just for a few minutes at what I'm going to entitle a recipe for peace in the church. And I want to look at Colossians chapter 3, beginning with verse 12. Put on, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering, forbearing one another, and forgiving one another, if any man have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye. Now notice that here he's not focusing on the fact that we are the elect of God. He's focusing on the importance of our behaving as the elect of God. Now, Peter in chapter 1 focused on the fact that we are the elect of God when he addressed those strangers throughout Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia as the elect according to the foreknowledge of God the Father. But here in Paul's letter to the church at Colossae, he's saying, seeing that you are the elect of God, here's how you're to behave yourselves. And I want you to understand that if everyone is living according to this pattern, all we will ever have in the church is peace. Now, you may read some of the things here and say, well, there's more to it than that. But remember, the church is an environment that the Lord has set up in such a way that peace can be maintained. And while we certainly don't have time to get into this afternoon, we recognize that if there's a member of the church that refuses to be at peace with another member, then there are steps the church can take to address that situation. And I'm sure you understand we could not get into all that this afternoon. But what I want you to think about is assuming that the church is maintaining discipline according to the Scripture, assuming that we're not dealing with some moral issue in a person's life in which they're unrepentant, but we're going to think primarily about just the little things about us that may disturb or upset someone else or offend another member of the church. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about our relationship each day. So he says, put on therefore as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies. Now that's an unusual statement. Bowels of mercies. Now the word bowels in a spiritual sense means the seat of your most tender affections. So keep that in mind. We're talking about not just your heart. which is the center of man. That's the way the word heart is used in the scripture. It is the very core of man, the center of man. It's who you are as a person, the heart of man. But notice this seems to be even more specific because it's referring to the seat of the more tender affections. When we think about a heart of mercy, we're thinking about a heart of compassion. And the word compassion means this, and I want you to think of this as homing in on what it means to have bowels of mercies. It's a sensation of sorrow excited by the distress of another. Now think about that as we repeat it. Bowels of mercies being the seat of the most tender affections has to do with a sensation of sorrow, a sensation of sorrow in you, which is excited by the distress of another. Now, does that describe you? Are you one that when another member of the church is struggling, they're suffering, they're depressed, they're sad, They have a problem they can't resolve, does that excite within you a sense of distress over their situation? How important it is that we try to relate one to another. How important it is that we have a disposition about us that others are set at ease. You know, that's so important for a pastor. If you feel distant from your pastor, if he has a manner about him that you don't feel at ease and comfortable, then that's going to greatly hinder his ministry and the prosperity of the church. So he says, as the elect of God, this is what we're to put on. The word put on means it's what people see. You know, this morning I put on a suit, and thankfully, that's what you see. You don't see what I look like before I put the suit on. You see the suit that I put on. This is what people ought to see about us. Put on as the elect of God. You are God's children. He says, put on as the elect of God bowels of mercies, kindness. You know, these things are so simple that we don't think about them, aren't they? Kindness, listen to this. Actual goodness that promotes the health of another. I never thought about it in that light. Actual goodness that promotes the health of another. It means a lot to a preacher when you're kind. It means a lot to a pastor when you're kind. This doesn't throw away the scriptures such as, if a brother be overtaken in a fault, you which are spiritual go to such an one. But oh, this has all to do with the manner and spirit in which you do that. Kindness. Be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. And we're going to see this is the foundation for all of it. Christ has forgiven us. Christ has bowels of mercy toward you. Let's look at a scripture that teaches that in Psalm chapter 78. And verse 38. This is when Israel had kept sinning against the Lord over and over again. And it says, but he being full of compassion forgave their iniquity and destroyed them not. Yea, many a time turned he his anger away and did not stir up all his wrath. What if God stirred up all his wrath toward us like we sometimes do toward each other? But he doesn't. If the Lord should mark iniquities, who shall stand? It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed. He hath not dealt with us according to our transgressions, but we often deal with each other that way, don't we? Oh, that we might have bowels of mercies and kindness, actual goodness that promotes health. And then he says, humbleness of mind. That means a deep sense of one's littleness. You know, a preacher needs that. If a preacher doesn't have that, this old flesh is going to get the best of him. You may not realize this, but Primitive Baptist preachers are some of the most afflicted men in their soul that you'll ever know. You may not realize it. Oh, the afflictions that they experience. And this isn't new. You can read about the old pioneer preachers, and I've given this illustration many times. Most of you have heard of Elder Wilson Thompson, who has been referred to as one of the most able ministers that there has been in America. And when he was a teenager and the Lord was dealing with him, his parents made him sleep on the floor in their room because they was afraid he was going to commit suicide. And there are just so many ministers that have that experience. I know I went through a similar experience where you felt like that the Lord was going to banish you from His presence because of your sin. But see, when the Lord brings you through that, that does something to you. That burns off a lot of dross. And sometimes that dross will build back up and the Lord has to do that again. Oh, may we have humbleness of mind. See, this is more than just the general term that we think about humility. This is, again, a stronger expression of us. Humbleness of mind, an ongoing sense and awareness and a thought process of how little I am. You know, whenever the Lord blesses me to preach and I get good response and maybe then I get in the car and go home, I'm thinking, if they only knew how much of a nothing I really am. A deep sense of one's own littleness. Meekness. That's gentleness, but it's a mildness of disposition. Not somebody that's hard and harsh and abrasive and pushy. This doesn't mean you're a compromiser. Some people just can't get it in their head that you can be mild and meek and uncompromising at the same time. Matter of fact, that's what you're commanded to do when Paul said, speak the truth in love. You know, I can be quiet, but stand firm on what is moral and right. It doesn't mean I stand firm and refuse to compromise on every little thing, but when it comes to things that ought to be without compromise, we can be meek in our disposition. Long-suffering is patient. Forbearing. You know, I have a dictionary at home. It has a real fancy name. It's called Spyrus Zodiates Dictionary of the New Testament. He sounds smart, doesn't he? Spyrus Zodiates. You know what his definition of this is? A man that was raised Greek and has an education in the language, and his definition of forbearing is putting up with. That was his definition. To forbear is to put up with. You know, that's what we have to do sometimes. Maybe there's a person that they just don't get it, that you're supposed to be meek, you're supposed to be gentle, you're supposed to be humble, you're supposed to be kind, that they just never have learned that. You just got to put up with them. But oh, how much better it is when we all learn these things. Have you ever felt guilty because, you know, no matter what, this person doesn't like me? It may be that they're not following, it may not be all you. You don't always blame yourself. I found out that when two people are trying to be kind and humble, it's no problem to be at peace. No problem. And then he says, verse 13, forbearing one another and forgiving one another, if any man have a quarrel against any, that means a complaint. We like to complain about other people. But he says, if you have a complaint against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye. Now the scripture teaches if there's been nothing that Christ has needed to forgive you for, then you don't have to forgive anybody. Does that apply to anybody here? No, he says, even as Christ has forgiven you, so also you do ye, if you have a complaint against anybody else. You know, even if we're all walking in a Christian way, we all have quirks that are different, don't we? There's things about you that bother me, and there may possibly be some things about me that bother you. We're all different, aren't we? And we all have different personalities and different things about us that may aggravate somebody else. And above all these things, put on charity. Again, the analogy is put on charity. And in Peter, he says in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 8, have fervent charity. That means stretched out charity among yourselves, which is the bond of perfectness. A bond is simply that which bands or ties together. Charity, which is love in action, love for the brethren. And while it's detailed in 1 Corinthians 13, it would certainly include all of these things. And when you are exercising and trying to develop these things in you, bowels of mercy, and if you're trying to develop kindness and humbleness of mind and meekness and long-suffering and forbearing, if that's the things you're trying to cultivate and strengthen in you, that is what will bind the church together. My closest friends in the church are the people that know the most of my faults but accept me anyway. Now, there's some people that know a lot of my faults and they decided not to accept me. You see what I'm saying? But the people that meet these two conditions know a lot of my faults and accept me anyway. I found that those are the people that I love and feel a sense of security with. Has that been your case? Charity is the bond of perfectness. You know, usually that word perfect means full grown or fully developed. But you know, when I was doing word study, it didn't mean that here. It meant perfect in the way we normally think about it, without flaw. That doesn't mean that we have become perfect, but if this was being practiced perfectly, which it never will be, but charity when exerted, when charity maxes out in the church, that's like perfection. We never reach flawlessness, but charity overflowing in the church is as close as you'll ever get to it here. And the reason Paul said in 1 Corinthians, now abideth faith, hope, and charity, but the greatest of these is charity, is because in heaven you won't need faith anymore, you won't need hope anymore, but charity will be perfect for the first time and also eternal.